This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, this is CoronaCast, a podcast all about the coronavirus. I'm health reporter Tegan Taylor.
And I'm physician and journalist Dr. Norman Swan. It's Wednesday, the 24th of June.
And the situation here in Australia continues to be focusing on Victoria. The numbers are going up there, but they're in a bit of a state of flux. So let's not talk about numbers, but can we talk about what's sort of happening there in general, Norman?
We can. And the reason for not talking about it is it depends when you hear the CoronaCast during your day. The numbers change during the day. I think between 16,000 and 18,000 tests were done on Monday. That's what the Premier of Victoria reported. And that will take time to process those. So things will change as the day goes through. And there are still cases where they don't know where the case came from, although that number will shrink as time goes on as they investigate and find the source. And remember, in Victoria, they're doing genetic testing as well, which takes a little bit longer to find out what's going on. But genetic testing eventually also narrows down the source. So truly unknown local spread becomes very, very narrow indeed. At least you hope that, because that's the situation you don't want to get into, because that's where a second wave can suddenly take off or steadily take off. So fairly even increase each day, but cumulatively it's still very worrying. And we've got one clarification from yesterday, that's Tuesday's CoronaCast. I said, based on comments that I'd read, that contact tracing relative to the man who was at the Black Lives Matter protest and spread the virus in the H&M store, which is one of the clusters in Victoria, there were some indications that he had caught it at the Black Lives Matter protest. I was wrong, or misled, or whatever the story might be. Quite happy to say I was wrong. He does not seem to have caught it at the Black Lives Matter protest and may well not have been infectious at that protest, but they're taking extreme care. So at the moment, it's not entirely obvious where he caught it from, although they may know that and haven't said, but the certainly the source of an outbreak in a shop, and shops and stores are a significant area, enclosed space, people getting changed in cubicles and so on. You're there for a while and you can, particularly if you're not socially distanced, pick it up. They're well known to be a source of spread.
There was also a suggestion that maybe some of these cases were coming from multicultural communities. And I wonder if we know if the government's done enough to communicate with them. Maybe the assumption is that people know what to do to prevent this spread, but it perhaps hasn't been communicated well to everyone.
Well, I think it's hard to know. All this will be dissected as time goes on. But it may well be that there are pockets of communities who aren't fully abreast of the situation because a lot of the effort has gone into communicating via mainstream media. I know that in the beginning of the pandemic, the Commonwealth, the federal government, was doing a lot in the non-English speaking press, particularly the Chinese press, because people were coming in from Wuhan. This is back in January and February. So there was a lot of communication and communication also with GPs who specialised in those, who looked after people in those areas. So there was an effort early on. I'm just not sure what the effort has been since. But certainly Melbourne is a very multicultural community. They're focused on particular suburbs, and you just don't want to take any chances that there's any misunderstanding there, particularly if people's first language is in English.
So let's go to some questions. And Rachel's living in one of the suburbs in Melbourne, which has been identified as a COVID-19 hotspot. She's asking for some advice on what measures she should take and how long it's likely that the high restrictions will be in place.
It's not too hard to answer this question, and it slightly differs from the advice given, but essentially just imagine we're back in lockdown. Only go out when you have to mix in areas where other people are indoors. So when you're shopping in Coles, Woolies, Aldi, wherever you shop, just keep your distance. Don't actually get too close to other people. If you're worried about yourself and you're at risk, get yourself an N95 mask and wear that as if you're feeling yourself at risk, if you're in that age group. Keep up hand hygiene. And it's indoor situations, and don't have lots of people around to your house. Just have small numbers of people there. The more people you interact with, the more chance you have of picking this up. So if people just re-isolate to an extent, if you have to go to work, go to work. It's not a question that you stop everything, go right back to where we were, but don't have unnecessary interaction with other people in indoor spaces. And that's the way that social distancing as a group will make a difference. Your kids can still go and play in an outdoor playground. Kids can still go to school, but it's shopping, it's church events, weddings and funerals, family birthdays, that sort of thing that you've really got to watch out for until this gets under control. And it's going to take probably 2 or 3 weeks to know in terms of the time frame, because this virus goes in 2 week cycles, essentially. 5 days average incubation period. After 2 weeks, you kind of know what's going on. And after a little bit more than 2 weeks, you can be pretty sure. The suburbs in Melbourne where this is happening seem to be really rallying down. Thousands of people turning up for testing. That's the way it's got to go. Slightest symptom, you don't go out, you don't mix, and you get tested.
A question from Martha, who's also in Victoria, asking about something that we sort of talked about a week or so ago, which is routine testing. It's this word that we hear given out in press releases, but what does it actually mean?
It is really confusing. We at CoronaCast have tried to get to the bottom of it. Routine testing is essentially what I've been talking about. You think you've got a problem, you think you might have contact with somebody, you're not quite sure, you turn up at one of these mobile clinics or one of these drive-in retail clinics and you get tested without any other reason than you might just have a symptom and you're a bit worried about it. That's routine testing, rather than focused testing, which is contact with somebody, contact tracing is out to search who might have it from a source in an outbreak. What's confusing is that they talk about cases under investigation, and you assume that if you've come positive in a routine test, unless there's an obvious contact that you've got with somebody else and you've come forward voluntarily, which is a fantastic thing, there is an investigation to find out who you've come in contact with. So I imagine that some of the routine tests are under investigation. They would have to be.
Yeah, there has to be some overlap there.
Yeah, but it's not clear. It's a bit of a mixed message coming out.
Another question about the Victorian clusters. Kay's asking, what actually starts them? Do we know where the Meatworks cluster started, whether the teachers and students at these schools where there's been an outbreak, where did these actually start?
It always starts with an individual. It starts with one person who's infected, the index case, they tend to call it, and that person has got it from somewhere else. You know, they've caught it at work, they've caught it on public transport, they've caught it somewhere, may not know where they've caught it, or eventually you can trace it back to maybe it's somebody who's come out of hotel quarantine. Genetic testing does help with that, but it's one person who turns up to work with symptoms or doesn't know they've got symptoms and spreads it to their workmates, like in the Meatworks, or a child, almost certainly not caught it at school. Children at school have caught it at home and they're taking it to school and they're picked up at school, or because of contact tracing, they're picked up to a family outbreak. That's where kids tend to get it. But it always starts with one person, and one person takes it into a situation where it spreads into a cluster. If that one person were to be socially isolated and not moving around very much, it's unlikely that person will infect anybody at all, unless they are a super spreader. But it's the person who goes into a situation where there's lots of other people and you're breathing the same air and you're all talking. And as you talk, you expel virus and that's how you spread it.
And this is a clarification from Russell. He mentioned, we were talking the other day about the R value of flu, so the basic or the reproductive value. And he said it sounded like we were saying that each virus has its own R value, but Russell's understanding is that the R value is a measure of the outbreak, not just the organism. Maybe we should clarify this.
Well, it's both. Each virus has its own contagiousness, and some can be very contagious indeed. So, for example, the MERS virus is not that contagious, which is a blessing because it's got a 30% case fatality rate. And so its R value is low in a natural environment. And this virus is reasonably contagious. Its R value uncontained is between 2 and 3. You pass on to 2 or 3 people. So that's in a situation where there are no measures. So where Russell is right is that public health measures, how we behave, changes the R value. That's the idea in public health measures. So the natural biology is it'll spread to 2 or 3 other people, but by social distancing, by hand hygiene, by the things that we're doing, you bend the curve down so that the R value comes to 1 or ideally below 1. And that's what we're aiming for. So it's true. Untrammeled, it'll 2 or 3 people. In New York, it may well have been as many as 6 because it's such a crowded city. On average, 2 or 3, we bring it down to 1 by other measures.
It's tricky. We're using these terms that we borrow from epidemiology, but in epidemiology, they have versions of R that sort of reflect this a bit more.
It does vary by virus. So viruses have different R values naturally, but you can bring them down by intervention.
Well, that's all we've got time for here on CoronaCast today. Don't forget to rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts if you can, please.
And if you have a question or like to leave a comment, go to abc.net.au/coronavirus and go to ask us your questions and fill in the form.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Bye till then.